You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is co-host extraordinaire, Dr. Melody Fox.
Hello, Alan. How was your weekend?
My weekend was great. I was in Philadelphia, but, you know, it was the town of brotherly love. We had a great time there.
Wonderful. Hopefully visiting family, friends.
No, it's a little bit of business, but managed to squeeze in some fun.
Well, that's good. That's great. Well, Mother's Day was this past weekend, and so that was really lovely to spend some time with Mom and her puppies.
Yeah.
My new sister's is, I was informed, so.
Okay. So she's adopted them?
She's adopted them. Well, she had one, and she just adopted another. She didn't want to tell me over the phone. I had to be surprised. It's like, oh, okay, a second one. Lovely. More children to take care of.
Well, I will take this time also to wish my mother a happy Mother's Day. She was in Vegas, and that's where she wanted to be. I couldn't be there with her, so we're going to plan something here soon and do something special.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, I'm really excited about our show today because what we do here on Answers for the Family is educate, entertain, and inform parents and other professionals that work with children on how to enjoy being around them more and help support them in being the best human beings that they could be.
Absolutely. And our topic today is one of those things that happens, unfortunately, when two parents both love their children, mm-hmm. but unfortunately the courts don't see it the same way, and they make a decision that one has custody or the other. And unfortunately, you have parents that then decide that they think they know better, mm-hmm. and they take off, they run to another country. And our guest today are going to talk about that. Our first is Keith Safarius, and Keith is an international private investigator located in Australia. And for the past 35 years, he has specialized in the recovery of children who have been abducted by the mother or father after the marriage breaks down and they take them to another country. Keith is also the author of the book The Retriever, which was published and released in September of 2005. And the book covers a number of retrievals and the drama that is involved in finding and reuniting the abducted children with their custodial parents.
And we also have in studio Logan Clark, who has spent 30 years in government and private investigations and is considered one of the top investigators in the world today. He has been profiled in BBC documentary, 5 books, Newsweek magazine, and dozens of others publications and TV shows around the globe. Now, Mr. Clark and his team have investigated over 6,000 cases from murder to the Mann Act, where they have rescued over 300 kidnap and runaway victims, many of whom were forced into human trafficking, not only in third world countries like Asia, Africa, and the Middle East and Europe, but right here in the United States, in towns that are as American as apple pie. And Mr. Clark is a regular as an expert consultant on such shows as 60 Minutes, 48 Hours, 2020, KABC Radio, and many others. And we're so thrilled to have you here. And just a little side note, I heard that Pierce Brosnan is developing and executive producing a TV series based on your life. And 2 feature films are also on the way. How exciting for you.
That is.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, Pierce
welcome.
Brosnan.
Yeah. I love him. He's great.
He's a wonderful guy.
So we wanted to, you know, thank you both for coming here. And I know this is a special place for Alan because, Alan, you deal with a lot of human trafficking as well with your private investigations company as well.
Absolutely. And I have worked with Keith on a couple of cases, and I've worked with Logan on cases, many, many cases, over the past 30 years.
Wow.
So I'm glad to be able to have them there because, really, we are talking about two of the probably the most well-known and most successful investigators at handling this particular type of investigation.
Well, you say successful. I'm sure success means you bring them home safely.
That's the objective. Yeah, that's the goal. Usually
yeah.
It works, especially if Keith's involved. Keith's track record is phenomenal.
Wow. Well, I mean, I'm just really curious because it's such an unusual field. Sometimes you don't you know, your 10-year-old kid playing with Tonka toys, you know, it's like, I'm going to grow up and be a private investigator. That'd be really cool. And I'm going to go find people that other people took. I don't see that as the first thing that comes to mind. So I'm just really curious, actually, for each of you. I know Alan and I have talked a little bit about his background in it, but as for you, Logan, and then Keith as well. I haven't heard your voice yet. Hello.
I'm listening, and thank you for the build-up.
Yeah, and so, Keith, and I mean, let's start with you, because one of the things, I mean, as Melody was saying, is that, you know, a child doesn't grow up saying, this is what I'm going to do. So, I mean, what got you into this specific part of the investigation business?
Well, it was something that I didn't plan to get into, but something that just evolved after the first retrieval that I did out of Genoa, Italy, back in the mid-1970s.
Well, and tell us a little bit about that case.
Well, that one was for an Australian father who took the children out of the country, went to Italy. It was the mother who took the children out of Australia and went to Italy, and the father had no idea where they were. I first had to locate them and then go to Genoa, Italy, do some surveillance. The mother was prostituting herself at a hotel, and the children were just left in the beer garden to eat potato chips and drink cordials. So I went over there, and after surveillance, knew I could get the children, got the father over. We had a boat stand by, and when the mother went to the toilet, a female investigator followed her and locked the bathroom door. So took her some time to get out, and by the time she did get out, we were on this fast boat and on our way up the coast of Italy and eventually to another country not far away.
Well, it sounds like it's almost reverse kidnapping. I mean, the woman doesn't know. She comes out of the loo and finds her children not there.
Well, that's right, and sometimes that's the only way we can do it. If she was there, there'd be all hell of a fight break out and draw so much attention. The children really wanted to be with their father. They loved right. their father, and from the due diligence that I did, I realized that morally I was doing the right thing by those children.
Plus, they'd be very traumatized, I would imagine, too, to witness that. I've worked with foster care kids, and having to take children away from their parents is just, it's heart-wrenching.
Well,
it is.
Yeah, it is. But I think to share something for our listeners so that they understand that at the time in which this is done, so that the children aren't traumatized, mm-hmm. you know, we have videos of the parents. We have pictures of the parents. We have things to be able to
share. Stuffed animal that they grew up with.
Exactly. So there's something that they know instantly that they're not being kidnapped. And in most cases, local law enforcement is contacted and advised to tell that person when they come out of the bathroom mm-hmm. that this is what's happened with your children, mm-hmm. so that they don't waste law enforcement's time and things like
that. It's a terrible thing to compare it to, but it's like in the old days when we used to repo cars, we would, you know, steal the car and then call the police immediately and let them know that the guy doesn't come out and go, hey, someone stole my car.
Right.
It's been repossessed.
Right.
And that's you need to let somebody know as mm-hmm. soon as you've done it, but you can't do it before. Uh-huh. You've got to wait until it's done.
Right.
And then call.
Because then they might be tipped off and you would never
find
them again.
Yeah, yeah. So. They may say, no, you're not. we're going to say. And it's much easier to ask for forgiveness than get no.
ask for permission.
That's right. Some people say we're breaking the law, but I always say we're not breaking it. We're just bending it very badly.
Well,
right.
It sounds like you're following a lot of times the letter of the law. The children were put in the custody of one parent, then the other parent decides, no, I want them, and takes them away. Without
legal
standards.
The courts courts don't always make the right decision.
Right. And we never take a child who has not been abducted already.
Right.
Right. And one of the things that I would like both of you guys to explain, and why don't we start with Logan, but explain some of the risks going into foreign countries to try to get these children out. That's one of the biggest questions that I get when I'm talking to people. And so just share a little bit about the risks and some of the things that you do to minimize those risks.
They don't always work. there's a lot of risks. Both Keith and I have been thrown in jails, semi-prisons in foreign countries. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, and you can, if you don't do it right, you could very very logically get shot doing it, and the person would just simply say, hey, I thought someone was kidnapping my children. I was protecting them. You have to be very, very careful. We have FBI warrants usually with us. We have orders from the court to bring the child back immediately and present the child to the court. But those papers are not recognized by that country. And even if it's Hague Treaty, there's so many loopholes now. We have gone through, Keith and I have gone through so much with the Hague Treaty that, I mean, there's even a clause in the Hague Treaty that if the place you're trying to get the child brought back to is considered dangerous, then it's a loophole. They don't have to abide by the Hague Treaty. Well, Los Angeles is considered dangerous because of smog, literally, and gangs. That can be used. And wow. So it's just such a difficult thing.
That's a real generalization of Los Angeles.
I mean, yeah.
Certain areas are more gang inclined than others.
Exactly. But there's a lot of risks. And you have to take those, like Keith, have nerves of steel and just sort of get the job done and get through it.
Well, that kind of goes to why did you get into this field in the first place? And then why do it if there's such a risk for your own personal safeties?
Keith?
Well, I think I do it. I don't have any fear of anyone or anything. And we have fantastic support in most countries around the world, mainly through our association, the World Association of Detectives, which has some 800 or 900 members worldwide. These people are high-ranking military officers, police, federal police, local police, and men and women from all walks of life, really, who have contacts in those countries. If they can't help us or advise us, they certainly know someone who can. I've seen investigators like us go into countries and just gung-ho, go and try and grab the children, run to the airport. They get arrested. Some of them have spent years in jail because of their gung-ho activities.
Yeah. It's not Rambo. You cannot do it like Rambo. It's got to be done like a bank robbery or just a very slick, smooth. The best thing in this world is when we're done and we're on a boat or a train or whatever we're on, people are standing around going, what happened? Mm-hmm. Who was that? What? You know, they don't really know what happened. There was no big scene. There was no big, commotion. Mm-hmm. You don't want that at all. You want it to come across as though everything is completely normal.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And we don't do it by ourselves. We always have the mom or the dad there that the child will immediately recognize. This creates less trauma for the child.
Well, I'm still curious, Logan, what got you involved in this and why do you personally take such a risk?
I got involved in investigations because I was a newspaper reporter in Hawaii and I thought it'd make me a better reporter. I got involved in the kidnappings. One of the first bosses I had, Walt Zwanitzer, was involved in it, and he started taking me on them. And I had had experience in my own family where someone had been kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And so I took to it real fast. Okay. And I really, and plus, as I grew older and had a daughter, just the thought of that happening just tore me apart. And so it really grabs at you when a parent calls you and tells you the situation that the other mm-hmm. parent has taken the child and they have no hope but to get people like you or us.
Yeah, I'm curious that you said when the parent calls you, how do they know to call you? Is it something you look up in the phone book? Do you go online?
Internet. Keith's book is out there all over the place, The Retriever. We're written about in papers. Alan is written about in books. He's written about in newspapers and magazines and stuff. I think he has a book coming out right now.
That's right.
We've got a new one coming out, right?
Right, and that one's called Fight for Your Dreams.
Right.
It's coming out this month, in fact.
Fabulous. We'll talk more about that another
time. Yeah, and they find it that way. And one woman, it just depends. I guess it's the luck of the draw on whether they find someone. One woman who has a case in the Middle East looked for 3 months on the Internet, trying to find international child abduction, people to help, rescues and stuff. And she finally came across Keith's book, The Retriever. And in an article written about the book, but she was in the States, mm-hmm. and said, well, God, he's in Australia. But in the article she was reading, it mentioned that Keith's partner, Logan Clark, mm-hmm. in California, and then she started looking for me.
Okay. So she did some investigating on her own.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, you have to, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the reasons for doing this show. You know, everything that we try to do with this show is to get the word out, mm-hmm. for people to know that there are resources out there, be it, you know, for your child to go to a specialized school or, unfortunately, in situations like this. If something like this has happened, we want to get the word out to people that there are experts out there that you can find that can get this done for you.
And like Keith just said, you really have to be careful. The parents out there listening to this, you've got to be careful not to hire, you know, some Billy the Kid, not to hire some Rambo, you know, that thinks they can go in there, well, I was an ex-military and I can do that. You really need people that know what they're doing. You need people that are calm. Alan, Keith, and I cover all three areas that, you know, and can handle just about anything in the world. Mm-hmm. But you really have to look at their background. You've got to. Yeah.
Exactly. And Keith brought up another really good point when he mentioned WAD, which is the World Association of Detectives. Even from that standpoint, we will get cases referred to us from other members because they know this is what we specialize in. Mm-hmm. So even though they may be in another country, but they may specialize in something completely different, but they know these are the people that you can contact that will get it done and will do it in a very positive and ethical fashion.
Right. Well, I was curious why, and either Keith or Logan could answer this one, but why doesn't the Left Behind parent go through the courts to get their children back? Are there ways that they could contact other countries or investigators, or what do you think?
Keith,
go ahead.
Well, you know, people do. The mom and dad do go through the courts many times, but the courts seem to be toothless to get the children back from a country that's not a signatory to the Hague Convention on Abducted Children. If they go to one of those countries that are not a signatory, there's little or no chance of ever getting the child back unless they come to someone like Logan and I. So the court really does not assist in those cases. Even if it is a Hague country, sometimes it takes months or even up to a year before anything is done. I've got a case currently in a country that is the signatory to the Hague. I had to find the child. I found the child some 3 or 4 months ago, and they haven't gone and approached the father or tried to pick up the child. Another case from Australia where the father searched for 3 years, engaged my services to help find the child. We couldn't, but the child was eventually old enough to go to school. The mother enrolled the child in a school in Amsterdam, right in the Hague. And it took 3 months to get that child back to Australia. The mum was arrested, and she's in jail in Australia at the moment. That father gave up his profession and rode a bicycle over Europe. 6,000 kilometres he rode during a period of 3 or 4 months, just getting recognition from media, hoping the hell that someone would recognise his child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just heart-wrenching.
What's really, really maddening is when someone... And I've seen this, and all of us have, where a poor parent will fight. They'll spend $50,000, and they've gone on for 2 or 3 years. The child, let's say, is 5 years old or 4 years old, goes on for 3 years, the court fight. And then finally, about the end of the 3 years or 4 years, then the court will turn around and say, well, you know, now the child's settled here in this country, you know, started school here, and now... So they don't want to move the child. Now it's going to be as disruptive to the child to move them back as it was when they were first kidnapped. Mm-hmm. So it's a catch-22,
right.
And it is just unbelievably maddening. And these people can lose their children forever.
Yeah, and it's just frustrating to me. I mean, working with a lot of different families in the court systems, the back and forth, and usually they're trying to do the best interest of them and not what's in the best interest of their children.
Yeah.
It's all a power and control, and I'm going to hurt the other one by taking away the child, or I'm mad at you because you got the child, so I'm going to take him or her.
Oh, Keith, how many cases have we had, Keith, where the father in many countries, like a Middle Eastern country, will take the child, go back, and what do? Keith, they give the child to the grandmother or the mother.
Somebody else
to raise. That's right. It's just despite the other other partner in the marriage. And I have a case like that right now in Poland where I've backed out of because I thought the father who was living in Australia, had married a Polish girl. She went back to Poland, very wealthy family there, and the Hague courts decided that the child should be in Poland, not come back to Australia. Mm. And I found that the father had no intention of bringing the child back to Australia. He was going to take it to Greece and leave it with his mother. Now, the child was too young to be able to speak English, or hadn't learnt English. It's now fluent in Polish, and he's going to take that child to another country where it couldn't speak the language, not because he wanted it, just because he wanted to, as you said, you did it to me, I can do it to you.
Right. Now, both of you have mentioned the Hague Treaty, and I don't know what that is. What is that? Can you explain that?
I'll let you do that, Logan.
The Hague Treaty, it's an international treaty that has been set out where countries are supposed to cooperate with a child abduction, a parental abduction. It deals strictly with parental abductions. And the other country is supposed to be a universal code for them. You know,
and where a child is taken to one of those Hague signatory countries, they should be returned under the Hague Treaty. The child should be returned to the country where it habitually resided for the previous 12 months. Now, that just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't. Otherwise, they wouldn't need people like us.
Okay. And then you were saying that was for strictly parent abductions, but are there times other people take the children? Other family members,
sure,
strangers.
Grandmothers, yeah, grandmothers, aunts, uncles, yeah, yeah. Have you had other relatives do it, Keith?
Yes, I have. Other members of the family, more often grandparents will take the child because they see that their son or daughter's marriage is failing or has broken down, so they'll abduct the child, take the child, and hide with it, take it to another country.
Or they're drug addicts.
Usually where there's an interracial marriage where one parent is from another country.
Wow.
Yeah, and Logan just touched on something when he mentioned about the drug addict because, and we've had a couple of cases like that to where one parent is in jail and then the grandparents of the parent who is out it goes ahead and goes after the child because that parent is a drug addict, mm-hmm. you know,
and is
not caring for the child or they've dumped the child with a grandparent and then taken off and then they come back and take their child after 2 years and have no real relationship with them. So
right.
The parents now are hiring us to go find not only their own child, but their grandchild.
And that seems to be a case that I've seen several times too, like the parents are having drug issues or other issues. Mm-hmm. They dump the child off of the grandparents. The grandparents are raising the child and doing a wonderful job with them. And then the parent comes in, gets, you know, a few months sober or whatever, and comes in and says, well, I want my kid back, where I think it would behoove a grandparent to go for custody or have
yes.
that person sign over custody at the time they dump the child off and take off
mm-hmm.
with the condition,
yes.
you know, they can have contact when they're clean and sober, but they're not going to uproot that child and take off with them
right.
again because that's another loss for the child. And, you know,
frankly,
to me, it's all about the child.
Yep.
You know, adults... You guys figure it out, but don't traumatize the child.
Yeah, these kids
than
are bounced back and forth, bouncing. In the old days, I think, Alan, you'll remember, I was working for Z, and we kidnapped the same kids three times.
Wow.
It was in Arizona. They were kidnapped by the father. We went and got them, then got them back. The father came, kidnapped them again. We went and got them. Happened three times. The third time, we went up to the school, and the girl saw me. And Z, and she goes, oh, hi, Mr. Z, are we going back to mom? We said, yeah, we just opened the car door. They got in the car. It was just a regular thing for them. And then the boy says, well, I want my dog. I want to go get my dog.
Okay.
I went back and got the dog.
I was going to ask you if you went
in. Yeah, it was crazy.
That's really important, though, those connections, because that dog may be the only continuity in their life. With
yeah, I learned before. I couldn't whistle really loud because I put them in a hotel, and I got the kid's coat. And I said, okay, if I'm not back in a half an hour, go without me. I mean, uh-huh. to take the kids and drive across the mountains. And I went back and I opened the door and I'm waving the kid's jacket and I'm trying to whistle for the dog. And I couldn't whistle loud enough. And I'm trying to get in. The dog finally came over to smell the jacket and I just grabbed him and pulled him in the car.
Oh, okay. Didn't give him a chance to see if he should bite you or lick you, right?
Yeah.
All right. You know what? We are talking with Keith Shafarius and Logan Clark, both of which are international detectives. The topic is parental abduction. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. All right, we're back. Again, we are talking with Logan Clark and Keith Shafarius. Keith's book that's out is called The Retriever, and we are talking about international parental abduction. We have some listener questions.
Yes, we do.
And if you want to present one.
Sure. And this is open to either of you, but one of our listeners wrote to us asking or stating, one of my friends in L.A. was married to a gentleman from Egypt, and 3 years after the divorce, which appeared to be quite amicable, her ex announced he was moving back to the Middle East. Her ex requested that the boy come to visit and meet his family. She did not feel that this would be a problem, but that was not the case. It took her 3 years of legal wrangling, thousands of dollars of expense, and much heartache before her son was brought back to the United States. So I guess it's not really a question. It was a comment they had. But is that a common theme that you have with your with the practice?
Yes, it is. Happens many, many times where it's an agreeable situation that the child visits another country where the father or the mother may be residing when the child gets there. And I saw one case where the mother was then locked up and beaten, but was given the opportunity to leave the country without her children. Mm. She feared for her life and her safety, so she had to leave. And it took 3 or 4 years for us to get the children, work out a way of getting the children out of the country successfully. Mm. And that happens. I've seen it happen just so many times.
Well, kind of, it flashed on me on the movie that came out years ago with Sally Field, Not Without My Daughter, when she went to the Middle East to get
That's
her daughter
right.
back,
yes.
and what she had to go through to go get her children back. That was a, I mean, that
and
was
all they have to do if it's a country that has Sharia law, all they have to do is accuse the wife of adultery,
mm-hmm.
and the minute they do that. Shuts everything down, and she'll actually be arrested if she comes back into the country to try to see her children.
So what countries pose the most problems or dangers for not only the parents trying to find their children, but also for a job that you're doing?
Mostly the Middle East and Muslim countries. I have a case which Logan just mentioned now. Logan and I are both working on it, where the father of the children has accused the mother of adultery, and she fears that she will be arrested the minute she gets off the aircraft in that country.
And he threatened to have her stoned.
That's right. He's threatened that she will be stoned if she comes in. Now, we think it's just a threat. It may not be so, and before we do go or take the mother into that country, we're certainly going to find out if there is an alert on her entry.
And Melody, and I think to add to that, when you're talking about what countries are the most dangerous,
mm-hmm.
it isn't as much the country as it is the contacts that the person who has stolen the child has in that country. Mm. The higher the contact that person has in that country, the more dangerous it is for us or whoever it is that's going in to get them.
So if they had the money to pay off officials or
and if the or if their uncle is a you know, colonel or a general in the military in Central America or South America or something, you've got a real problem. Now, another one, it may be, you know, it's all real simple, blah, blah, blah. I did one in, I think it was Costa Rica, somewhere around there. And when we got to the place, it was a 20-foot wall with glass on top of it and barbed wire around. And the guy was one of the biggest drug dealers in the entire country. And it was his nephew. So it's my problem was not with who the father was, with, you know, with getting the child and everything. All of a sudden, it, this guy's protecting his coke.
Right.
So he's not thinking I'm after the child. He's thinking we'll get more trouble with people when people think we're doing something. It's what they think we're there to do, not what we're actually there for.
And it's what that family member told them that you're doing. And
exactly.
So they're believing their family member as opposed to knowing what the truth is.
Right.
Now, how often does this happen in the world? I mean, you're talking about other countries, but I know in the U.S. too. So do you know how often it happens in the United States or in other parts of the
international,
world?
International, isn't it about 5,000 a year, Keith?
Yes, it is. Out of Australia, Australia's population of just over 20 million, there's average of 1.5 families a week lose children to overseas. Now, that's the recorded ones. There's obviously more. It could be up to 2 or 3 a week that lose. So, you know, our figures are right down. The latest figures I've read on the United States was something like 6,000 children are abducted out of marital situations per year.
Yeah.
That's
not all overseas, you know, within other states of the United States as well as overseas.
So what are the signs that a parent should look for that maybe will tell them the other parent is planning to abduct their child, not a rescue, but the first abduction, which creates a need for the rescue in the first place? What are the signs that this is about to happen?
Well, usually if the non-custodial parent is seem to be buying luggage or making arrangements. There may be back through friends, some alert, which we've seen happen on some cases, that the father in this particular case bought luggage and he had access every or visitation rights every second weekend, and one weekend he just disappeared. But friends of his had alerted the mum in Tacoma, Washington on that one.
Wow.
And Logan will know that case.
Yeah, if they have... if the child has a passport or is on the passport, I mean, for example, the child's from the father's from one country, the mother's from the United States. The child will have a passport. He's on the United States passport, on the mother's, or have their own passport of their own. If a lot of parents, I have recommended to them to go to the embassy that their husband is from, that country, and take their court order, their custody order, and register it with the embassy and try to get it to be known, because what usually happens is, and I've seen it with Japan, with all kinds of countries, where the other parent will just simply take the child to their embassy and say, I lost the passport, I need another one, and that country will give it to them instantly. So they have a passport that the other parent isn't even aware of.
Okay. And so if the one parent goes to that other embassy for that other, their other spouse, then, but you could go ahead and alert them. So if that parent comes in with a child that's taken the child, then it'll be maybe red flagged or...
Yeah, theoretically.
Theoretically.
Yes,
okay,
theoretically.
But then again, it depends on probably who you know
and
how
which,
competent
and which
they are
country
at the time.
It is.
Yeah, which country. It's all about contacts.
Yeah, and it definitely has to do with which country. And I can think of a case in particular where Logan and I went into a country. We went in to the consulate and advised them, and the same thing, to flag the passport. And they took our client aside and said, we're not going to allow you to steal your child back out of our country. And she said, why do you think we're going to do that? And they said, because we just checked out the two guys that came in with you, and they have a reputation.
Yeah, we know what they do.
One embassy ambassador said to the woman, do you know who those two men you are with? Do you know who they are? Do you know what they do? And she went, yeah, that's why they're here.
I think it's made it much more difficult now with the internet and Google.
Yep.
If we go in our right name, someone just Googles our name and there's pages and pages about us and what we do, what we've done, and I guess what they think we're going to do.
Yeah.
Years ago, before the internet, we could go and no one would know who we were and what we were doing there. But it's just so much more difficult now with the worldwide net.
If the internet had been up like it is now when I was thrown in jail in Poland, I'd still be there.
Okay.
That's right.
They just never knew I was a detective.
Right. So I'm just thinking.
It's the same as when I was thrown in jail for a week in Yemen. They didn't know what I was doing or who I was, and they just deported me. And then I went back 2 days later and stayed for 4 weeks.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking, you know, the increase in danger. I mean, private investigator used to be, you know, private. You used to be able to go under the radar. Nobody knew what you looked like. And if a few people did, maybe it was just a few people. But now, like you said, with the Internet, your job has just become 100-fold more dangerous, I think.
And a lot of times we can coordinate from a hotel in the country. And coordinate it, but it's some places it's wiser that we don't go into the streets and actually do it ourselves because we could be recognized.
And that's where your contacts would come into play.
Exactly.
Team members.
Exactly. And Logan touched on something earlier when he was talking about the case in Costa Rica where we're going in for a particular reason. Mm-hmm. It has to do with that child. But the people don't necessarily know that it's the same reason. And we had a case in Japan in which we went to Japan, we started working the case, and we were meeting with Interpol. And the person we met at Interpol said, "How come you're being followed by the triad?" And we said, "We didn't know we were being followed by the triad, but because he's local, he knew that." And he said, and I said, "Well, why do you think?" I mean, and he said, "They just need to know that whatever you're doing doesn't disrupt their business. So you need to make sure that they don't think that you're affecting them or they will take you out."
Okay, I'm naive here. What is the triad?
Triad is the Asian mafia.
Okay. Wow, this sounds like...
And probably one of the largest in the world.
Right.
Well, it just seems like no wonder they're going to be doing films and movies about this. This is so... you know, interesting and
it's
exciting. And
it just makes our profession more exciting.
And, yeah, it does. It really does.
Yeah, but you're not doing it to find money or other people. You're trying to find children.
Yep.
That's right. So we've done cases where the mom or the dad has had no money. Logan has, I guess. I've done two international cases for no fees whatsoever, just for out-of-pocket expenses, because I really... felt sorry for the children, really believed they should have been back where they were stolen from.
And one of them we were on cost you $10,000 that you paid out of your own pocket.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I would think that sense of giving back is huge. I mean, making it feel really good to be able to know that you're busy enough that you could help those that are in need on occasion. Now,
Alan and I always say savor the moment, you know, when we do something and we've got it. You got to. When it's over, the parents go away, they're hugging, and everybody's all happy, and Alan and Keith and I look at each other, and it's like, okay, let's savor the moment, go to the bar, have a drink, and you know, and then figure out the next problem we have.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels good to the heart to be able to do that. I know what I do is not on the expanse that you do, but I know working with families that don't have any money, I mean, it feels good to be able to help them. You know,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Know, and you hope that you're busy enough that you could offset that a little bit for your time and effort. But I have another listener question here, and either one of you, again, could answer. But this one says, "I have read so much about this topic, and I understand that a parent who abducts his or her own child is rarely punished for the deed, especially if they take the child outside the U.S. What are the real facts about that? And also in the U.S., are there any consequences for that?"
Keith?
In Australia, the consequence for that is jail. If a father or mother abducts a child against any court order, it is a criminal offence, an indictable offence, and they are arrested when they're found, brought back to Australia, similar to the mother I mentioned earlier who was found in Amsterdam. She was brought back to Australia and she's serving a jail penalty now. A child I rescued from Cyprus some years back during the 1990s. The father came back to fight the case back here. He was immediately arrested and was jailed for 1 year. He was most upset about that, getting jailed for taking his own son, but he broke the court orders, took the child to Disneyland, didn't come back to Australia, just took off on a yacht somewhere.
Wow.
Right.
The Costa Rica one?
Mm-hmm.
The father came to America. I brought got him back. It was in the news and everything else. And I was on the news, so the father knew who did it. And so about a year later, the father came into the United States, contacted me. I figured it was to kill me. And he contacted me and wanted to hire me to kidnap the child back from my client and take it back to Costa Rica. And I called the police, turned him in
to
the police, and now he's in prison. He went to prison.
Well, I was wondering if there was any ethical or legal things that you do when you have a client. Is that client for life, or do you bounce back and forth, or just morally and ethically that's not what you do?
Yeah, we're guided very we have our we look at the morality of the situation, what we feel. We don't, like Keith said, we don't look at the black and white law, you know, of, well, this person did it and now we can't do it, you know.
Well,
that's right. And we, through our World Association of Detectives, we have a code of ethics that we must abide by and adhere to. If we didn't do that and the association found that we were breaking that code, well, we certainly wouldn't no longer be a member. And I'm a life member. I've been a member there for close on 30 years.
Yeah, and I was just curious, too. You've been doing this for a really long time. And I'm sure this is something you'd want to do till the day you die or as long as you could do it. But any thoughts about training other people to take over your practice or what you're doing, your investigations, when you retire, if that's
how many times have you retired, Keith?
I had a very large investigation business here in Australia, and I sold out 6 years ago to some of my employees and thought, well, I'll retire. But believe it or not, I'm busier now than when I had the business. People, you know, you can't train someone to do this. It's something that you have to do. It's something that evolves within yourself. You can't tell people how to go into a country, how to avoid being detected, arrested, jailed. It's something that grows with you.
Yeah, you only people you work with.
And it can't be passed on.
Yeah, well, only to people you work with. You can, you know, you can have your partners that you work with that do it, that know what they're doing. You know,
and you know that they're doing it well.
Yeah, you can do that. But to train somebody for it's very difficult.
Well, I think it would
I'd never want to be responsible for someone trying to do it that I'd tried to train and they end up in jail and spend the rest of or half of their life in jail for doing something that I tried to teach them to do.
Well, it seems like it's something that you have a calling for. And this is your talent and your ability that you're using to help with others, which I think is the best thing that you could ever
do. That's right. Right now, Logan and I have six or seven cases in countries all around the world that we're working on, all active cases.
Wow. And you're taking time out to spend it with us. We really appreciate that. But I guess it's who you know Alan.
In 2 days' time, I'm going to the World Association of Detectives board meeting in Austria.
Wow. Now, I want to go back for a second. Is there one parent more than the other that abducts their children? Is there any rhyme or reason to this?
In Australia, the statistics show that abductions are carried out by about 60% of fathers and 40% of mothers. I guess that's because you know, there's more interracial marriages here where Australian girls marry men from other countries. We have a big intake of foreigners into this country at the moment.
And when I started, when Alan and I both were doing it, I think it was more mothers in the United States. It wasn't international when we were doing it in the 70s, in the 80s. It was not so much international.
That's right. Well, I'm speaking about international.
Exactly.
Within Australia, there's more mothers run away.
Exactly.
With children,
I, as you were saying that, I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, you know, that's right. Internationally, it seems to be more the fathers because it's of these mixed marriages. And not that mixed marriages are bad. I mean, just one, you know, mixed from different countries. And it seems to be more the fathers. But in the United States, the kidnappings that happen in this country and stay in this country, I would say it's more the women.
Wow.
And the men always had traditionally the toughest fight to get anyone to listen to them. Because a mother in the 60s and 70s could take her child anywhere she wants. You can't do nothing, you know, about it. And the fathers, it wasn't a crime.
That's right. Similar in Australia and the UK from what I've heard from investigators there and other people involved with child matters.
Well, it seems like fathers' rights have really come to the forefront over the last 10 years or so as well. So for them to get custodial guardianship or custody, physical and other custody, is more prevalent now. So I'd imagine that
Absolutely.
Makes more sense.
And there's a lot more joint custody. And that's one of the things.
That's hard.
Yeah, but there is. There's a lot more joint custody to where they're saying, you know, they're calling it joint custody, even though it might be 60-40 as far as the amount of time they're spending with one or the other. But with the joint custody means that either parent can potentially be the one to take the child. Whereas before, where you had one person that had custody, one had visitation, the only one that can really get in trouble for taking off is the one that had visitation.
Right, the non-custodial.
Correct. I believe that every child has the right to have both parents.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's very difficult when you get divorced, a couple gets divorced,
and the marriage fails,
then one of them wants to move back to their home country. Mm-hmm. Well, unless you're both rich, that's going to be damn hard for you to have visitation going back to, you know, Jordan or the Philippines or wherever it is you're going to go. Mm-hmm. Who can afford, you know, okay, you can have the child for 2 weeks, I'll have him for 2 weeks. Who can afford that?
Right.
Back and forth to another country.
And a lot of times now, a lot of courts are saying you can't move to even another state. You have to stay within so many miles so that child can have a continuous relationship on an ongoing basis.
And once that is told to them and they're from another country, they grab the child and they go.
And they go ahead and take off.
They go, screw you. You're not going to tell me where I'm going to live with my child.
Right.
Exactly. And actually, Logan and I had a case like that. And when we were talking earlier about the moral and ethical decisions, I had two thoughts. One is that there have been cases where we have done an investigation on the client. In other words, the client has said, this is what I want, and presented it. And we felt a little bit uncomfortable to the point that says, if you want us that badly, then we're going to need X amount of dollars up front to do an investigation into your situation to see what it is. Because you're telling us that the courts were wrong, and you're telling us, you know, that you have all of this additional information. And we said, well, then before we're even going to take that portion of the case, you have to be willing to hire us to investigate you and everything that you're saying. Mm-hmm. And a parent that truly loves their child and believes in what they're doing is not uncomfortable with doing that. They will do it. They have paid that so that they knew that from a moral and ethical standpoint, they weren't going to get us to work their case unless they did that.
Right.
And we have done it.
For that reason, I accept an average of about 3 out of 5 cases that come to me. After I do that due diligence, I'll speak to neighbors from old addresses, speak to their Sunday school teachers, their churches, their school teachers, relatives, have a look at court documents, and then assess if ethically and morally I'm doing the right thing by those children.
You do all that before you even make your decision. If you're going to take the case, you do all that.
Yes, that's right. Well, that's what I was alluding to. Yeah. And if I don't feel that I'm morally doing the right thing by those children, I don't accept the case.
That's the way it should be always.
Right. And when we talked a little bit earlier about the parents, one of the questions that was asked where they talked about, you know, are they rarely punished? And I know Keith talked a little bit about Australia, but in the United States, that is true. They are rarely punished. You know, from the standpoint of jail time, they're just losing custody or they're losing visitation. And I can think of another case that Logan and I worked on to where all they did was say that this person could only have supervised visitation, and the court assigned us to be the monitors during that time. And in the very first visitation, as we were sitting there, the father came in, he was holding the son, he walked out into the backyard. And we had a radio call that came in from one of our people that was on the back street behind the backyard that said that the paternal grandmother was parked over there and walking in between the two houses. He was going to hand the child over the wall. Mm-hmm. So at that
during
point,
supervised visitation.
Yeah, during supervised visitation.
Sure.
So.
And I've seen stuff like that too when I was supervising visitation with parents, non-custodial parents, or parents when the children were in the foster care system. And I know we have to wrap up in just a second. Our time's gone real quickly, but I have one more question to ask. And real quickly, I want to get your website. So how can they contact you? Or if anybody's interested in more information, quickly.
Yeah, there's a couple.
What about you, Logan?
Logan at loganclark.com. Clark has an E on the end of it. Logan at loganclark.com.
And Keith, go ahead and give us your website and how people can find the book.
I don't have a website, but email is Keith, K-E-I-T-H, 1942 at AussieMail. That's AussieMail.com.au.
Okay, great. Now,
wait, before you do the question, I want to add two more websites to that also.
All right.
You can also go to www.ihttf.com, and that's in regards to human trafficking cases, or www.global-pursuit.net, and also be able to reach Logan in regards to parental abduction cases.
Okay, I know this has to be quick, but do you ever hear back from the children you've brought back?
Yes, I was just going to mention that. It's really rewarding when the children keep in contact, send Christmas cards, and on a number of occasions I've been invited to family reunions because I was really the one who reunited those families.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those children are now old enough to have their own children
and
still
wonderful.
Keep in contact.
Well, hopefully they keep their families intact so they never have to put their children through that.
That's right.
And we do want to thank our guest today. We have Keith and Logan and Alan all doing the same work.
And Logan, with that last question, we've got about 20 seconds. Do you have a story you want to add in regards to being reunited after the fact with someone that you have rescued? In other words, kind of the emotion of it.
I got caught the one in Sudan that I did, just graduated from high school in Washington, D.C., and they contacted me, and she just graduated from high school. They used to send Christmas card pictures and things. It's really wonderful.
So it is an ongoing reward in your heart.
Yeah, it's a rush. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Everybody, thank you for listening. Be back and listen next week, and do something good every day.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox. Right here on LA Talk Radio.